Hi, welcome to Bolt for Life. I am Garrett Bolt, actor, personal trainer, former powerlifter, pro wrestler, and chronic pain thriver. Bolt for Life is a podcast about living with the challenges of chronic pain. Our goal is to acknowledge, inspire, and relate to people living with chronic pain. I believe it is not only possible to survive, but to live a full life and thrive with chronic pain. No matter where you are in your journey, our mission is to give you the information and inspiration that will help you become Bolt for Life. Today on the Bolt for Life podcast, we talk with Alicia Williams, and she is an amazing woman. She's a very accomplished runner, started running in 1984. She still runs to this day. Yeah, Alicia shared with us a pretty devastating accident, 23 miles into the Boston Marathon, just past Heartbreak Hill, and you're going to have to listen to what happened next. She's got a great story. She's super motivating. I can't wait for you guys to check it out. And on the Bull for Life podcast, today we have a very special guest. Could you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, I'm Alicia Williams. I'm a local runner and triathlete here in Wilmington, North Carolina. I train with Without Limits Triathlon Group.
I want to say I'm really excited. Our producer, Brian, originally found an article on you in the Wrightsville Beach magazine, and we both read it, and we're like, we got to try to get her on the podcast because it's just such an amazing story. Without getting into that too much yet, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, like where you're from and your background?
Sure. So I'm from Wilmington, North Carolina. I was a three-sport athlete in high school. Started running, actually, in 1984, my senior year in college at NC State University, really just to get off those those college pounds, because I was engaged to be married. So I kind of picked up running just as a hobby, just to lose a little weight, and found that I was a little bit competitive in the sport. And I got invited by some friends at IBM, where I worked, to participate in a local 5K, and ended up winning it for my age group. And after that, I just started kind of running with the group, doing as much mileage as I could at the time. And then years later, I got pregnant with our son. I just was a casual runner. And my husband, when we moved back to Wilmington, found an ad in the Star News about the Trispan race. And he's like, you should do it. And I'm like, I've never really run competitively except the one race. But I ended up coming in third overall for women. And then after that, I just started picking up and doing more and more, the Battleship half and doing things like that. And it wasn't until, I think I was 46 years old when I met this guy in the gym at Gold's Gym. And he's like, I had a race shirt on from the Trispan. And he's like, hey, are you a runner? And I said, yeah, well, I'm a runner, but I'm just about to throw in the towel. And he said, why is that? And I said, I can't seem to break an 8-minute mile to save my life. And he goes, oh, I can get you faster. And here I was, a 46-year-old lady, sitting here looking at this 22-year-old kid going, I've probably seen my better days. And he took me through a workout, and I thought I was in shape. I hurt for 2 solid weeks after he worked me out, and I thought, well, if there must be something to this guy. And he explained to me his passion was to train runners. And so he's like, let me give you some track workouts. What's your next race? And I said, well, I'm going to run the Battleship half. And sure enough, I ran that race and came in first in the age group and broke the 8-minute mile pace. So then I started training with him seriously after that, and then did a number of races and kind of hit that point in a woman's life where the wheels, the nuts, the bolts, the screws come off, the menopause thing. And I started doing, I was getting so many injuries that he recommended I get into triathlons and stuff. But then the moment came, 2014, where he said, the only thing I haven't trained you for is a full marathon. And I'm like, I'm not interested in doing a full marathon. He said, why? I said, because every time I train for one, I get injured. And he said, we're going to get you, I think you can qualify for Boston. And so, I kind of went along with it, with the goal in my mind that when the time came, I would just drop out and just support the marathon, because I've always staffed an aid station for the Wrightsville Beach Marathon. And but I got closer and I thought, well, maybe I can do it. And it was my first marathon running for time. I had done the marathon leg of Ironman before, but sure enough, I ended up coming in second in age group, I believe, but qualified for Boston in 2014. So I ran it in Boston in 2015 and and re-qualified for 2016. So that's when the fateful experience.
Well, to back up a little bit, let's start with, you started running in 1984, right?
Yes.
That is awesome. So, and you really started like at 46, you found like this new competitiveness with the coach from Without Limits. Is that right?
Correct.
That in itself is inspiring to me, you know? So how old were you when you ran your first competitive race, do you think?
Gosh, I was 23.
Wow. Yep. Wow. And then 20 years going forward and then like still reinventing yourself in your 40s and finding another coach and then qualifying for the Boston Marathon, which is just amazing. So I'm already blown away, you know.
Well, thank you. You're sweet.
Oh, it's amazing. And I hear the you were having injuries, like the injuries were catching up, your body's changing, you know, you're going through that time in a woman's life. And we've talked a lot on the show about hormone replacement and bioidentical hormone replacement and trying to be as healthy as we can be. We had Dr. Gabe Frank on the show who specializes in that. And he's helped me a lot with my hormones now that I'm getting to, you know, middle age, you know, a little older. And then with all the injuries on top of it, you know, just compounds it. But so you're working through this phase of your life. You qualified for the Boston Marathon, ran it, and then qualified for it again. And then for our listeners who haven't read the article, what happened next?
So interestingly enough, you know, every Boston Marathon, you never know what race conditions you're going to have. Like in 2015, it was pouring rain, 37 degrees, 20 mile an hour headwind. Starting 2016, it was just as dry as it could be, hot, but a dry hot where even when you sweated, you couldn't even, you know, sweat was evaporating immediately, so you could not cool yourself off. And, you know, started that race, felt pretty good, but as soon as the temperature started warming up, you know, everything, probably by mile 16 or so, and I should say the first 16 miles are net downhill, and when you start climbing, I mean, that's when, you know, your quads just start blowing up because you've, you know, you've been running downhill, and then you start uphill, and your legs are what just happened, you know, and I started getting a lot of cramps, you know, going from my quads to my calves and switching legs, and I was like, oh, this is not going to be good, you know, and you kept trying, yeah, try to hydrate as best you can on the course, and I kept playing all these mental games. I typically, when I run a mile for a special person in my life, you know, to get me through it. And that way I say I'm running mile X for, you know, a best friend or my dad or my mom. Or, and this particular race, 2016, happened to be, would have been the anniversary of my grandmother's 100th birthday on that day. And it was the 50th anniversary of the first woman having run that race. And so it was a special kind of emotional, you know, type of race. But I had made it through Heartbreak Hill, which is the worst part of, you know, that's the part where you hit the wall, the proverbial wall, as everybody calls it. I was past that. And once you pass Heartbreak Hill, it's net downhill to the finish. And so I was playing all the mind games that you play. You know, I had gotten past that point, and I'm like, there's only about a 5K left to run. And I got to the 23-mile mark, and I remember out of the corner of my right eye seeing something come shooting across the road, and I thought, who in the world just threw something in the path of the runners? But I knew the object was behind me. I didn't know what it was. I just saw something come flying, and I thought, well, it's behind me. I don't need to worry about it. What I didn't think about was it ricocheting off somebody's foot behind me, and it was on a downhill, and it was a nutrition tablet container that rolled under my foot from behind on a downhill at the 23-mile mark of the 26.2-mile race. And I stepped on it with my left foot, and I kind of surfed across it, you know, it kind of rolled with my foot on the downhill, and it shot out from under my foot, and my leg just jammed in the road really, really hard, because it was one of those, your legs are tired, my legs had been cramping, I was dehydrated, and when that abrupt jamming in the road, I felt and heard my left femur snap.
Oh.
And I didn't know what it was. I'd never broken a bone in my life. And I didn't know if I had torn a quad. I didn't know what happened. Just something popped. I mean, it was loud enough I heard it. And my leg kind of flailed out in front of me. And I thought to myself, in that slow motion thing that you go through, I was like, oh my God, something just broke. I'm going down. And I knew I was going to fall forward because I was on a downhill. And I fell on my hands and knees. And when I turned over on my rear end, I looked down at my leg, and though my quad was straight, my lower leg was really cocked off to the left side, and I thought, oh my God, I've broken my leg. And then everything in my body started seizing up, cramping, and, you know, I was everything was cramping. Yeah. I mean, I was screaming in pain, you know, and I'm one of these very high threshold, pain threshold people.
Sure.
And three cops, you know, ever since the Boston Marathon or Boston bombing in the marathon, you know, the first responders are immediate. They're everywhere on the course. And they came, three, I think they were sheriffs, came running out to see if I was okay. And one of them was funny. He was like, yeah, that's a quad tendon. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I broke my leg. He's like, no, it's a quad tendon. I did it. I'm pretty sure I broke my leg. You know, and I had to borrow his phone to call my son, who was down at the finish line, you know, to tell him something happened. He goes, well, how am I? I said, they're going to take me somewhere. I don't even know where they're going to take me, you know, in the ambulance. I don't know what happened. And you're going to have to find me. And he's like, how in the world am I going to find you? I said, I'm just going to have to call you from the ambulance. But, you know, they had to, the first responders came out with a sheet to get me off the road. I don't think they wanted to push a stretcher out in front of the runners. And, you know, they picked me up, and I can't even describe the pain with your leg in multiple pieces. It was actually in multiple pieces. It wasn't just in two. It was in multiple pieces. And, you know, they picked me up, and they're carrying, you know, when they carry you, they're shifting from side to side. And so the pain with that shifting, I could literally feel the bone, you know, rubbing together, if not snapping more. And, I mean, it was excruciating.
Wow. Pain. And you literally still had racers coming by you while they're trying to get you off the course.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And they had to walk. They had the ambulance parked behind a building, and they had to walk. I mean, it was a good probably 100 plus yards, maybe more than that, to get me in the ambulance. And then once they put me in the ambulance, they put a traction splint on my leg, and they had to pick it up and shift it. I nearly knocked a dent in the side of the ambulance from the pain from that, right?
Wow. And I love that you still had time, despite your body cramping up from the race and then the compound fracture in your leg, to argue the diagnosis with the cop. I love that.
Yeah. He was a cute, he was a pretty burly guy. Uh-huh. It's kind of comical. And what was funny is that's the point where you're like, you're glad you're a number person, because I had to remember my son's phone number to call him, because I didn't have my phone or anything on me. So to call him and tell him, you know, what was going on. And, you know, they took me to the emergency room, and the worst pain was when they started moving me again, you know, to get me off the stretcher onto the emergency room stretcher. And then they immediately took me to x-ray. And, of course, they start moving my leg all around trying to do an x-ray. And once again, I mean, I am literally screaming at these people, like, stop moving my leg. You're killing me. And I still didn't know what was wrong. But the x-ray technician, she's like, we don't need any more pictures. I see the problem. And they didn't tell me, right? So I'm in the ER. My son shows up, and he had taken an Uber over there, which I had told him to do. And they brought one of those computer on wheels, you know, the carts that have the computer screen on it, and he could see the x-ray, and I couldn't see it. I mean, he turned white.
Wow.
And he turned the he turned the thing around, and it looked as if, he's like, Mom, you don't want to see it. And I'm like, yeah, I want to see what is causing me so much pain. And he turned it around, and literally it looked like if you were playing the old you know, the old wishbone game where you break the, you know, the bone in two. I mean, it literally was a what they called a comminuted fracture, where it was, you know, it was twisted, broken in pieces, actually came off, and it was wedged, you know, almost in a, you know, like a T shape almost, you know, with one bone wedged against the other. And so they had to, you know, they couldn't do surgery that day. It was probably 3 o'clock in the afternoon by the time they got to that. So they scheduled to do surgery. They wanted to put a traction splint on my leg, but I was like, they had to drill through my lower leg to do that. And I'm like, I can't take any more. I cannot take any more pain.
Yeah.
You know, just keep the morphine coming and I'll be fine. But, you know, they didn't do surgery until the next morning.
Wow.
And so I had to sleep that night with the cramping and the, you know, things like that.
And, you know, from what I understand, I've never broken my femur. One bone I've not broken, but I understand it is absolutely the worst to break.
Yeah, and, you know, it's rare to do it. I mean, especially running. But I think just when I talked to the surgeon about it, and they're like, yeah, the impact, you know, especially with your muscles and everything cramping up, it could do it. But they did run tests to see if there were cancer cells, you know, to see if there was any osteoporosis or anything in the bone. And they finally came to the conclusion there must have been a stress fracture before. And I had remembered, you know, kind of stepping in a hole on the beach in the dark running and kind of jamming jamming that leg up. But so that must have been where it came from.
And then that horrible fall on that bottle.
Wow. Oh, yeah, that was awful. But, yeah, the next morning they did surgery to put a titanium rod from my hip to my knee, where I had two screws at my hip and two at my knee. And so I can't even explain to you. They wouldn't let me go. Every time they would get me up to walk, you know, imagine that. You have surgery one day, and yeah. the next day they're in there, okay, time to stand up and walk. And I gave them the look, you got to be kidding me right now, right? And so they'd stand me up, and I'd almost pass out because I had lost so much blood. It wasn't a compound fracture. It was a, I think the article said it was a compound fracture. It wasn't. It was, it didn't break the skin. But the problem was, even, you know, when the bone's jagged like that, it tears through muscle tissue, and there was a lot of internal bleeding. I mean, my leg swelled up like nobody's business. And they got me up to walk, and I just about passed out because I'd lost so much blood. So they had to pump, you know, a bag of blood in me. Yeah. And then the next morning they came back, time to walk again. Wow. And I stood up and just about passed out again. And I just got so lightheaded, and they pumped another bag of blood, $1,200 a bag.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, so that was lovely. But they wouldn't let me go home until I could prove I could walk up and down the hall on crutches and climb stairs.
Wow.
And here I am, 54 years old at the time, you know, and learning to walk again after this nasty break. And I'll tell you, it was painful, you know, trying to even walk on crutches. And I was finally by the the break happened on a Monday, did surgery on Tuesday, and it was Friday. I mean, every day I was trying to walk again, and I couldn't pass the test, right? And of course, when you're a competitive athlete, it's a challenge, right?
Of course,
you got to pass
it's
the
on.
Challenge. And finally, by that Friday, I'm like, I'm sick of being in this hospital. I'm going to do whatever. I don't care if I pass out. I'm going to do whatever I can do to prove I can walk and climb stairs. And I'm going to tell you what, the fear of standing up after that happening and not knowing if it's going to break or you're going to fall again. I mean, it's almost like a PTSD.
Absolutely.
Type of scenario.
And then, so you're stuck in Boston. You can't leave the hospital until you can walk. And then on top of it, I can only imagine recovering from the race itself. You did 23 miles. It's almost a full race, you know. I mean, I can only imagine, and compounded with the blood loss.
What's interesting about that is, for the first time ever having done something that different, that distance, I wasn't even really sore, and I think it's because of the IV bag of fluids and morphine and all the pain meds. I really didn't feel the effects of that. I think I was focused on the break.
Mm-hmm.
But what was strange about it is, you know, I had flown up there, and I live in Wilmington, obviously, and they wouldn't let me fly for fear of blood clots. I had to have a ride home from Boston to Wilmington. And my husband owns two Subways, and he had two managers quit over the weekend. And it was difficult for him to get away. But my 80-year-old parents drove when they heard that I went down, or they were tracking me on the tracker, and they knew something was wrong. And so they drove that evening as soon as they found out, left. They live in Leland. They left Leland, drove as far as they could, and made it to Boston. I was out of surgery by the time they got there, but then they drove me home.
Oh, that's awesome.
Know, so,
And that had to be a pretty rough ride. That's how, is that 16 hours?
It was brutal. I mean, we left Boston at 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon at the end of the Boston Marathon week, and we made it to somewhere in New Jersey by about 1 in the morning, the time we had to stop. And I was done at that point. I mean, in the starts and the stops, and you're trying to stabilize your leg from moving left to right, you know. And, of course, you got to make pit stops. And then all of a sudden the fear hit me. Oh, my God, I've got to get out in and out of a car, you know, to get in to even use the restroom.
Right.
And it's traumatic. I mean, it was terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I tell a story how when I came back to competition after having my first fusion, the accident happened when I was deadlifting 750 pounds. And it took me a year and a half to get back to where I was really working my way back up. And I had trained. And the first time I deadlifted 700 pounds since the accident, I threw up in the bathroom. And, you know, I knew in my brain, like, okay, I've progressively been working up to this. I know, like, this is only 10 pounds more than I did last week. It's going to, but for some reason, that number, like, just stuck in my head. And I threw up in the bathroom. I came out, and, you know, my coaches were there and stuff. And I did it, but it was just that anticipation, like, oh my God. You know, I think that's part of the journey, though, working back through it, right? Just from the beginning to however far you take it, you know.
Well, that's the thing they scheduled immediately, you know, the day I'm home. You know, I got home on a Saturday, and Monday, you know, they have a physical therapist, in-home physical therapist coming to start, you know, working with you. And I think the demoralization of, you know, here you have been training, and I had done an Ironman, 3 months before, 4 months before Boston. And now, you know, the physical therapist comes in, and I can't even bend my leg. These little ridiculous exercises, mm-hmm. you know, and it's painful, and I couldn't do it. And I mean, it's when you're used to being a competitive athlete. I mean, that is psychologically,
it's huge,
damaging.
Yeah, yeah. Huge. It totally yeah. is. Basic things, using the restroom, kicking. You know, basic hygiene is just a huge challenge. Wow.
And it's funny you say that, because I've always, you know, viewed myself as insanely independent.
Mm-hmm.
And now I couldn't do anything. I mean, to that point, I couldn't shower by myself. I couldn't go to the bathroom by myself. And even when we stopped on the way home from Boston, you know, that I had to be in the hotel room. My parents were in one room. I was in another room by myself. And all of a sudden, I'm like, how in the world am I going to get up during the night and go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
How am I going to shower? And I have never had more of an appreciation for disabled mm-hmm. people, because of, you can't get through doorways. I mean, you know, on crutches, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's such a great point you make, from going from being such a high level competitive athlete to now not even being able to do basic hygiene, and what a challenge that is. And for so many people stuck in chronic pain, it is a daily challenge and a continual challenge. But I think that's a thing where, you know, you can go, that's it, I give up, I'm done, I'm going to sit here in my own stink, or you can do something, keep moving forward, you know. And so it's definitely, you move forward. So what did you do from there once you got back and you were working through the physical therapy?
Yeah, so I had to go through, you know, in-home physical therapy. Then I went to outpatient physical mm-hmm. therapy, and they did a range of things with, you know, getting me where I could drop one crutch, you know, over some weeks at a time, drop one crutch and start walking on one. And then you got trust issues, right?
Oh, yeah.
Can you trust that broken leg, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to go through things like climbing stairs. I mean, and we're talking four stairs, and it's, you know, it feels like a mountain,
yeah.
right? And, you know, the pain of going through them doing Graston technique and trying to bust up the scar tissue. And I mean, it's excruciatingly painful,
yeah.
you know, and worse. I was taking pain meds to try to get through, and luckily I'm not an addictive type of personality,
yeah.
but I had horrible allergic reactions to the pain meds, and
wow.
I couldn't take them.
Yeah.
I mean, I finally just went to, you know, a leave and things like, because mm-hmm. I could not take pain meds.
Just couldn't tolerate
yeah.
it.
And then, you know, I probably got 6 months into the physical therapy, got to where I could try to run again. So I got on I was going to the gym on crutches, and people were coming up like,
that's
wow,
awesome.
That's so inspiring, you know. And
yeah.
meanwhile, you feel like, well, I've got to do something, you know. It's like mm-hmm. I've been, and everywhere you go, you know, when you're a runner or triathlete, everywhere you go, you see somebody running, and it's
right.
just stab, stab, yeah. stab, you know, stab you in the heart. And, you know, so I thought, well, I can at least do upper body. You
yes.
know, I can't do anything lower body right now. I even tried to cycle, but because of the swelling and inflammation and stiffness in my leg, I couldn't even do, you know, the bike revolution.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't swim because I had open incisions. And, you know, so I was like, well, I can go to the gym. I can do upper body stuff. So I started doing as much as I could upper body wise. And then I eventually got to where I could try to walk on a treadmill, but holding on, you know, kind of offloading some weight, you know, on the treadmill. But I tell you, I kept probably about 6 months in, I kept thinking something is not right, because I was limping. You know, I mean, not from the pain as much as something just didn't feel right. And as it turned out, my leg was too long, because the surgeon had left too much space between the bone halves when he put the rod in.
Oh, wow.
So my leg was too long. It was rotated 11 degrees inward. And so it was just, I couldn't get a natural even walking gait, let alone running gait. And one day I had gotten where I could swim again. And so I was kicking, and all of a sudden I had this knife sharp pain in my leg. Felt like I'd been shot in my knee. And come to find out, a screw had started popping out of my knee, and it was catching on that IT band insertion. I thought I was going to have to crawl to my vehicle to get home.
I can't imagine.
And so I went, you know, to a different physical therapist, because I had gotten to the place they didn't know what to do with me at that
mm-hmm.
point, because it's like I just wasn't progressing, and it was painful, and I was limping, and I couldn't get past it. So I went to this other physical therapist, and he did some measurements to find out that it was too long, rotated inward. And he looked at me and he said, "The whole thing needs to be redone." And I looked at him, I said, "You have got to be kidding me. I cannot go through this again." Because ironically, I had seen a YouTube video, I don't know, probably 2 months prior to that, with how they get these rods out. And there's literally a hole in the end of the rod that they stick a, you know, a pin through, or kind of a peg through it, and they literally hammer the things out because the rod's very tight in there, so it won't move around, you know, to allow the bone to heal around it. Well, it didn't heal. I mean, there was space all the way around the bone. It just didn't heal back. So he tells me this, and I was angry. I mean, you talk about being angry. And I remember calling my coach, and he's like, "Well, you know, you just need to, you need to get over what happened, focus on getting better." And he's like, "The sooner you get it done, the sooner you'll be back to running." And I mean, I was mad at him. I was mad at everything. I mean, I was mad at the whole situation. Like, I cannot go through this again. Mm-hmm. And I finally, you know, the physical therapist told me, he's like, "If you don't do this, you're never going to be able to run again." Wow. And it's like, you can't even walk well. You just need to bite the bullet and get it done again. So I went, you know, went locally and checked on some resources, and they said that the best thing to do is to go up to Chapel Hill because there's a good trauma surgeon up there that specializes in this. Mm-hmm. So this was 8 months into the recovery and be told.
And having gone through all that already.
God.
And can I say, though, I think it's so important, we talk about it on the show, is to be an advocate for yourself. You know, like, if things aren't going right with your doctor or something isn't right, I mean, you know, figure it out. Talk to some people. And, you know, we've been fortunate to have some great medical professionals on the show that really advocate for patients to advocate for themselves, you know. And it sounds like you took that on yourself, and you wanted to find solutions, right? Because obviously it wasn't going the way, you know, it should have.
Yeah.
I give you a lot of credit for that. Oh, some people sit in that, you know, and say, "Well, that's it. This is the way it is. I'm not ever going to be able to walk right or run again. That's just the way it is."
And that would have been the easier. I mean, the easier thing, the less painful route would have been just to say, "I can't go through it again. Yeah. I'm not strong enough," you know.
Yeah, and who would blame you, you know, after everything you'd been through, you know? So I that's so awesome that you took it upon yourself to, like, let's get this thing figured out. I don't want to, but.
Well, and people were like, "Are you going back to Boston to have, you know, make that guy redo it?" And I'm like, "He didn't do it right the first time. And that's too, you can't fly after it. I'm not going all the way to Boston to get this redone." And it was especially painful for me because I'm an NC State graduate. So I went to Chapel Hill to have it redone. I mean, I joked about.
You had to bite the bullet out of that.
Yeah, I joked about going to the NC State Veterinary School to have it. Yeah. And they said, "You do realize they put horses down when they break their legs."
I had a surgery on my ankle. We were living up in Connecticut. And long story short, because of the nerve damage to my back, I was working as a personal trainer, and I had broke a bone in my ankle. I didn't realize it because of the nerve damage. So I was working on it. It was break and grow and break and grow to the point that it actually tore the tendon that holds my arch up. So I had to have this surgery, have this thing fixed, the bone ground down. They had to put a screw in it. They had to fix the tendon. And all of that went okay, but I developed these complications from it, and the complications were this thing called RSD. It's a nerve disorder. It's really painful. The only thing they know is it's brought on by a trauma. Well, this guy, I wasn't happy with the job the guy did, let me put it that way. And about 6 months into the recovery from that, I was diagnosed with the RSD, which I was already mad about. I changed doctors. I had a staph infection in that ankle, and I'm like, now it was like, literally my pain management doctor saw it. He's like, you need to go to the hospital now, or you're going to lose your foot. So I'm in the hospital. I'm arguing with the doctors. They wanted the same guy that did the surgery to come back and do it. I said, "You guys can talk to him. You can consult with him. But if I see him, I'm dying. I don't even want to see that guy in here, man." So I can relate with not wanting the same guy to do it. And it was a huge hassle, you know, and they literally had to call around in the middle of the night to find a surgeon that was willing to do it. Nobody wanted to touch it because it was somebody else's work. Yeah. Did you have the same problem with the doctors?
A little bit. What's interesting is you start, like, I went here initially, and, you know, just to me, it's all an interview process. And it's just, you know, the ego and things like that. I just could not deal with that. Mm-hmm. And so when I went and, you know, found this guy in Chapel Hill, he, very personable. And of course, you start, you know, he talks about how he would have done it had he done it the first time, you mm-hmm. know, and he would have used a different rod. He'd have gone a different angle, things like that. And he was very assuring that he felt very confident he could get it repaired and done right. And what was interesting is this was in December after the April break, and I went back in December because I had met my deductible on insurance at that point, so I needed to get it done the same calendar year, right? And so he, his PA after the surgery came through, came in, you know, these, not really PA, but the student, you know, the students that observed the surgery, they said he measured my leg 33 times before he closed everything up to make sure that it was right. But the interesting thing is I got another 6 months into the recovery process and the front side of the bone still didn't heal. And so, you know, we kept giving it a little more time because, I was 55 at that point. And they're like, you know, maybe you're just not healing as fast, you know, take all these supplements to see if you can stimulate the bone growth. And, you know, finally by the 8 month mark, they're like, if it hadn't healed by this point, it's not going to. So we need to go back and had like, you know, x-rays and CT scans and stuff like that. And they're like, the front side of the bone just it didn't heal. So he said, what we can do now is go back in and do bone grafting. So this was the third surgery, right? And do bone grafting. And they took bone marrow out of my hip and a sponge-like material with cadaver bone that graciously, you know, someone who had passed away, it was cadaver bone from, you know, a very generous, I mean, to this, I wrote a letter, a nice letter to the family that, you know, that donated the organs and stuff and the bone fragments. And so they went back in January of 2018 and did the third surgery. Then, you know, it got months in, again, learning to walk for the third time in your mid-50s. It's not an easy feat.
And for people listening, Alicia looks amazing, by the way. Okay, so and we're going back a few years there with her reference to the age. So amazing.
I paid him to say that.
Well, I'll say it all day long. You look great.
Yeah, but you know what was interesting I found out the third time around is one of the local sports physical therapists here in the area bought one of these Ultra G anti-gravity treadmills. And so that was a way that they really have the machine for patients who are maybe obese and can't walk on their own, but it actually was a very good vehicle for, you know, even injuries and surgeries like I had, because I could not walk or bear weight running, you know, full body weight on it. And so I started at like 50% body weight and just started walking initially. And then week after week, I'd increase a little bit, run a little bit. And finally, I worked my way up to 90% body weight.
That's awesome.
And then I felt like, I was like, I think I can do this. I think I can run on my own, but it was pitiful. You know, I had, I started at like 12-minute miles. I'm like, oh, this is disgusting. I mean, I'm just, but I'm running. You know, it's like, don't complain, I'm running. But it's just amazing how long it takes you to build up your endurance, but how quickly you lose it.
And it takes you to rebuild it. That's great you were able to use the zero gravity treadmill. Did you feel like you could replicate your normal stride and everything with your run and walk?
Yeah, pretty close. I mean, it does lift you up. I mean, you wear, I guess, what you'd call almost like neoprene shorts that they zip you into this chamber, air chamber, and it kind of lifts you up a little bit. So it almost felt like moonwalking a little, you know, it was, but it did at least let you go through the normal motion, you know, and get that feel back. So at least psychologically, you feel like, even though you're on a treadmill, you feel like you're running again. And it's a little bit deceptive because once you start increasing and adding weight back, you realize how much, you know, pounding, how much, you know, intensity running really is on the body, because it's great when you're at 50% body weight.
Yeah, And then as you
start adding 10% at a time, you're like, holy crap, this is pretty intense on the body.
It's one thing I always say is like the one negative side effect of being active is that things wear out, you know, and whether it was the stress fracture in your leg from earlier on or, you know, just working back into it. But, you know, I always say it's better than the alternative, you know, which is not being active. And so you were able to actually start running once you started working with the zero gravity treadmill.
Yep, that was recommended. I think my coach again had found out that this physical therapist, he was the only one in all of Wilmington that that had this anti-gravity treadmill. And so I thought, well, it's worth a try. I mean, maybe it gets me back in the game. And sure enough, it got me back in the game, and, you know, to the point where I could start running a little bit on my own. And then I'd run 4 minutes, walk a minute, run 4 minutes, you know, which seemed kind of pitiful. But I mean, it was challenging.
Like you said, it's so, you lose it so fast, you know. And then now you mentioned earlier too that you started going to the gym when you're on crutches, and then so you're still doing the gym and doing physical therapy and finding this anti-gravity treadmill. That is so inspiring. You know, I always say the gym is like a great I say it's like a great second prize to your sport. You know, it's like a great consolation prize because you can take that energy, that competitiveness, that physical energy, and you can put it into the gym and you can do a safe machine, or you can do a safer, you know, movement with a dumbbell as opposed to whatever your sport was, you know. So I love that you incorporated that and you still had that drive to get in there and do it.
Yeah, well, back when I was younger, I used to be a bodybuilder back on
my late 20s. Yeah, now we missed that part.
Yeah,
I could have guessed
20s.
That, but so cool.
Yeah, so I used to lift an incredible amount of weight. So, you know, it was kind of in my DNA. And I still believe, especially for women, I think strength training is incredibly important. You know, a lot of times you tend to ignore it when you get, especially if you're doing run distance, or you know, you're training for a marathon, or you're training for an Ironman. It's still important to get the strength training in, especially for females, because you know, you get to this age and things do start breaking down, and you know, women over 40, you know, definitely need to do some strength training as a mix in with cardio, right?
Yeah, there's a great book I recommend, and the title says it all. It says, "Lift like a man, look like a goddess," you know, and like we always try to encourage everybody, people with chronic pain especially, to get in and do some type of resistance training, you know, because first of all, you feel better. And as long as you can do it in a safe way and with relatively reasonable, you know, amounts of pain, especially if you have chronic pain, you're going to feel better and you're going to be a little stronger. And there's so many benefits, you know, and you're living proof of it. You know,
it's so
awesome.
Thank you.
So from there, where did you go from getting to the 12-minute mile after the third surgery?
Yeah, so I started back this the group that I run with Without Limits. They have a program. It's called Walk to Run. And even though I had been running at the highest level with the group, you know, and I could run some, you know, for a 5K, some sub 7-minute miles. And in a triathlon, I could run like 7:20 pace coming off the bike for short, you know, for sprint tries. But, you know, here I was relegated to the walk to run program, and I'm very extremely competitive. I mean, anybody that I run with, my husband says, I'll compete with any, you know, I just, everything's a competition to me, right?
I'm laughing because I guess I can relate.
And so here I'm with these walk to run people, and I'm sitting there going, I'm going to be the fastest in the walk to run program, and I'm going to graduate out of this up to the next level. And there's really three levels past that. So I kind of progressed, and I was probably pushing myself a little too hard, but I'm just driven that way, right? Ultra competitive. And so again, I was kind of first in the walk to run program, and then I made it up to a level one group and kept working my way up. But I was still, you know, there's physical pain and then there's psychological pain. And there are those things where you just beat yourself up because you play that mind game, because everybody's like, oh, you're so inspiring to be back out here. And I'm like, I'm so far off what I used to be. It just is demoralizing, right? And sometimes you'd leave there and everybody else is inspired by you, but you're like, you leave sometimes depressed and just feeling like I'm never going to get back to where I was. And you know, you just keep chipping away at it and chipping away at it and try to give, you know, try not to think too far about the past or too far into the future. Just take every day, you know, every week at a time, you know, and progress as much as you can. And then, you know, I just I start running May of 2018, started running again, and just week after week after week. And really, honestly, it wasn't until the fall of this year that I really started getting back to close to what I was, you know, was previously doing. But it just took every week, you know, just a very slow progression, you know, low distance mileage, conservative pace. And my coach, he knows how I am. I mean, he will say, I know how you are. You've got to be careful. You know, you got to stay injury free. Don't do too much too soon. And he'd have to throttle me. You know, he'd work out a plan to keep my paces conservative and distance conservative. And again, it is still much less mileage than I used to do. But
sure. Yeah. But it's gains. Finding that happy balance, right? You know, and we always talk about the risk to benefit ratio. Like, is the risk of what I'm doing, is it worth the benefit I'm getting out of it? You know, and I love how you share about your coach and the people you were running with and having that supportive team. I think even in the article you mentioned how they brought over food and stuff when you were stuck at home, and how important is that to you, having that group of friends and people around you that are like-minded and have that?
Well, I tell you, you know, my husband, who's not, He was a three-sport athlete in high school as well, but he's had some back issues and things, and he always kind of had a bit of a negative impression of the running group. And when I got home from the hospital, they had already planned out for like a month of people coming over, bringing food, and he was so touched. In addition to me, I mean, I was humbled. I mean, you never realize how much this group is. You're really family. I mean, and my husband completely did a 180 overseeing these people come over, sit down with me, bring me coffee, just come chat, you know, bring meals every day for, you know, for a month, you know, that they were bringing. I mean, and it was just, it's an amazing, I mean, I'm probably going to tear up, but it's an amazing group of people, you know, and it's a, some people call us a cult, but it's family. I mean, we are all, and we all have each other's best interests. We always cheer, you know, for the, you know, the guys that run 15-minute miles to the guys that run, I mean, we have three of our female athletes that just qualified for the Olympic trials. I mean, and all of us, we're always cheering for, you know, it's not us versus anybody else in the group. You know, we're all family, and we cheer for each other, and it, I can't tell you how much that meant to me for these people to, you know, bring this food over, sit down, care, call, email, you know, it's incredible.
That's so awesome. And I can relate. That's, you know, Ben, I always say that's my secret to working out for 30 years and competing is having such that great support group. And for me, it's in the gym, you know, and a lot of our friends are in the gym. And it's not that we don't like hanging out with people that aren't in the gym. It's just that a lot of the friends that we have do go to the gym, and it's from a diverse background. Not everybody looks like a bodybuilder or a powerlifter, but we're all there to make ourselves better, to be a little bit better, you know? And I think that's the thing that matters. Like you said, from the person that just walked through the door to the person that's accomplished, you know, athlete at what they do, as long as everybody's trying and working and doing the best they can, it's a beautiful thing, you know? And it sounds to me like you inspired the heck out of them because they were telling you so, you know?
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, the thing of it is, you know, I always support the local races as well. You know, when we do it's now named the Wilmington Marathon. It used to be the Wrightsville Beach Marathon. And every year I always do the Wolfpack Aid Station. We do NCAA themes, and I get out there and dress like Mrs. Wolf and dance around for 6 hours, you know? Cheering, but all of our local runners know it's me, right? And they come high five and take pictures with me and stuff like that. But, you know, I'd like to be out there supporting them. And once I broke my leg, you know, where I couldn't run, I was trying to volunteer for every race, you know, to staff aid stations, hand them water, give back, you know, to other people, because it's so inspiring when you see the support that you got when you were down and injured. And I want to be out there supporting my buddies who can run right now, you know, get out there and be on the other side of the support side of things, you know. And it's, you know, there's quite a bit of feel good in that, to give back a little bit when you're always used to taking as a runner, you know, and other people supporting you. So it was great to be able to support, you know, my friends and people I don't even know, you know, but they're runners, right?
So yeah.
It's a camaraderie.
It's so inspiring. And I've been fortunate to do some of the same things with powerlifting, which was my sport. And so I go and I help out a little bit. A friend of mine's coming down to Nationals, which is in Myrtle Beach this year. So, you know, I can go, and I feel so great just being a part of it, even just wrapping his knees, you know, helping him out, running his numbers, coaching a little bit. You know, it's really rewarding. And I think it's like you said, giving back a little bit of what's, you know, been given to us. And that's really what we want to do with the podcast is, you know, other people that are going through some tough times. And I find a lot of the people that I meet that have chronic pain have the kind of common theme of they were very active. They did a lot of things, because usually to get to the point of where you have so many injuries and so much chronic pain, you have to kind of be a doer, you know? And some people go different routes, you know? But I hope through our experiences and having you on the podcast, you can inspire some other people too, because you're sure inspiring me, and I'm glad to have you here today.
Well, thank you. I mean, and I think sometimes people, it's sometimes believe that, you know, just stopping doing it, you stop and doing activities and things will make you feel better. And to me, the more movement you can get, you know, even if it's to walk a block or a mile or whatever, you can just get movement or get in the gym, get in the water, you know, do something to move, because our bodies need movement. And it just, you know, it's it's unfortunate when people think, well, I can't do anything, so I'm just going to sit around, and then they gain weight, and then they feel worse about themselves, and then they're in more pain because they've put on weight. And, you know, the thing of it is you don't have to be a triathlete. You don't have to be a marathon runner. You don't have to be a power lifter. You just need to move, you know?
Yeah, life is movement, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what would you say, we ask this of every guest, what would you say to that person that might be listening to this that's sitting on the couch? What would you tell them?
Get up. I mean, you know, get up, get moving. I mean, if you have 3 or 4 stairs, you know, from your outside to your inside, walk up and down the stairs, walk up and down your hall, walk up and down your street, do something to move, you know, pick up a, you know, milk jug or fill it with water and, you know, do some lifting, just do something to move. I mean, the worst possible thing is to sit there, you know, and it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better by sitting, you know.
Absolutely. Every person I've met with chronic pain and talked to, I feel horrible if I sit. And I feel horrible if I do too much. So obviously there's got to be a happy medium in there somewhere. But that's so awesome. I love your motivation. I love your energy. But so let's go back a little bit. What was your bodybuilding career like?
Oh, my goodness. I kind of, it was kind of a spiteful thing. Let me be honest. You probably aren't even old enough to remember this, but you remember when Corey Everson came on the,
I idolized her.
So, you know, I was a gym rat at the time. I wasn't really, I had kind of gotten away from running and just going to the gym, doing aerobics, lifting weights and stuff. And I started watching that. I'm like, man, she looks amazing. You know, just completely ripped. And I was like, I want to try to do that. And I remember at the time my husband said, if you ever do that, it's grounds for divorce. And I'm just spiteful enough. And then I was like, oh, really? So I just started lifting as heavy as I could. And there was a guy I ran into in the gym who was, he was a bodybuilder. And we just started working out together and he started like teaching me a lot of things about bodybuilding. And I think I started at about, I probably weighed 120 pounds when I started. Next thing you know, I was like at 146 pounds that I had put on. And I was, you know, needing to buy new clothes, you know, my shoulders and my back and everything was so tight. And I got to the point where it was difficult to maintain it. And I was like, everybody's like, you should compete. But I was a little, despite being very competitive, I was a little self-conscious about walking around on stage, you know, and prancing around and doing the poses. Like, I don't think I can do that. And most people who know me are like, oh, come on. You know, you get, and I'm like, no, I don't think I can do that in a little bikini. I don't think I can do it. And so I finally decided, you know, this is too hard to maintain, you know, with working a full schedule. And then the problem was, once you get to that size, how do you undo it?
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I was so tired. I mean, I couldn't run. I was much heavier than I was before. And I mean, it was just hurt, you know, to try to run. So I got in the pool and started swimming, you know, to try to stretch things out. And next thing you know, I got limber enough. And I wasn't never a swimmer or anything from, I just hacked around, you know, swimming recreationally. But at least it was enough to let me undo some of that bulk that I had
balance
put
it
on.
Out a
you
little
know, and
more.
It took a while to undo that.
Yeah, yeah. My wife's kind of going through a similar thing. She was a figure pro, and then we had our son. She kind of retired. We had our son. Then she came back and did physique, which was even a little more muscular class that they came up with. And she got to the point where, like, she won a show, and I'm like, all right, let's go to nationals. She's like, nope, I'm done. I'm retiring. And then now she kind of had to go through the same process, kind of like redesigning her body, wanting to be a little bit more feminine, a little bit still, you know, muscular and in shape and working out, but different, you know. That's really interesting that you've been able to transform yourself. Did you find a lot of the mental toughness, for lack of a better word, you could translate from one to the other, or things in common between the endurance sports and more of the resistance training?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because it takes commitment and time for, you know, regardless of what sport it is. I mean, if it's tennis, if it's golf, whatever, it takes committing to, you know, focusing on, you know, in addition to work, you know, figuring out where you're going to fit it in and, you know, how you're going to get the workouts in, what your goals are. I mean, a lot of that, you know, the same things that you have to think about and put time into, regardless of what sport is there, you've still got to make that time and make the commitment to doing it and establishing goals. I mean, a lot of it is establishing goals and where do you want to take it?
You know, as a side note, I had a Corey Everson poster, you know, the young budding powerlifter bodybuilder that I was. I remember when she was Miss Olympia multiple times. It's so awesome. So how did the article come about for the Wrightsville magazine?
Yes, so the writer for the article I actually run with.
Oh, cool.
And she talked for a couple of years about at some point we should do an article about you. And I said, well, you know, if you ever want to, you know, I'll be a bit modest. If you want to, I'll do it. But, you know, you just tell me if and when you ever want to do it. And I was recently running with her. We were doing one of the downtown hill runs, training run, and like I said, the past probably 6 months had really picked up in performance. And she goes, what you've done is absolutely amazing. I mean, this is her words, not mine. You know,
well,
I don't
I'm going to
sound like I'm bragging.
I'm going to agree with her, though.
And she goes, I really want to do this article. And at the time, she was going to do a joint article about me and one other lady and maybe three ladies in one article. And then she asked me to write up a synopsis of when I started running all the way through the injury and the recovery and all that. And once she got the dissertation, as I told you, she decided that it was one article was not enough to do both people justice. So she just did this one focused on me. And then she's got the other lady coming up, who just turned, the other friend of mine who's also a runner, she just turned 60, so she's going to have her turn, I think, in a coming article. But, you know, I mean, it's humbling that somebody, I'm just this little hack, you know, local runner. It's flattering that somebody wants to write your story, and I just only hope it inspires somebody. And it's kind of funny because I think if nobody else was inspired, just reading the article re-inspired me, you know. I mean, even though it's my story, all of a sudden you're like, now everybody's read the article and there's this expectation, right? So I got to live up to the expectation and continue to, you know, to try to make gains and performance and endurance. So it inspired me as much as it did anybody else.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, it inspires us here too, because like I said, our producer Brian saw that article and we were blown away by it, and it's impressive. It reminds me, because you remind me of that same thing when you said that. I met Jack LaLanne years ago at, it's a long story, I was at an industry show, but he was promoting his juicer. I was working as a model at another booth, but on my break, I got to go over and actually talk to him, and he was amazing, you know. And for people that don't know, Jack LaLanne was like the first fitness guy ever, had the first, you know, TV show, workout show, and just truly an inspiration. And, you know, the first thing was I felt so great because he said, wow, you look like you're in great shape. What do you do? And I'm like, oh my God, Jack LaLanne just asked me what I do to work out, you know. And but the coolest thing was you could see when we started talking about fitness, like his eyes just lit up, and he was in his late 80s at the time. And and the thing he told me that I took away the most from, he said, you know what? He said, I do something every day. He said, I'd feel like a hypocrite if I didn't. He said, I've preached the benefits of exercise and nutrition my whole life. He said, if I didn't do it, he said, you know, I'd be, you know, a fraud. And that's how he lived, you know. And I see that same thing in you.
Oh,
you know,
you, thank you.
You walk the talk, as we say here. You know,
thank you.
And it's just really an honor to meet you. What do you have coming up? What's the plans? What are the plans going forward?
Yeah,
for your
so
training?
I'm keeping the distance a little bit short right now. So I'm probably going to do the Azalea Sprint Tri, which is in April, and Wrightsville Beach Sprint Tri, which is typically in September, I believe, if I got my dates right. I may do some small races in between, but I tend to just like triathlons a lot. Mm-hmm. I like the challenge of the swim bike run versus just running. I do enjoy running. I would love, I mean, my goal is to be able to get back to Boston, mm-hmm, and get revenge on that course, and I don't know what I will experience. So you know how I'm talking positively. I don't know how I'm going to experience once I get to that 23-mile mark, you know, if I would have some kind of PTSD going through that space or stomp on it or spit on it or whatever,
right,
that particular mile. But a goal would be, even if I don't know if I'll be able to qualify again. I think I will because I've aged up. I may be able to qualify again. But even if I don't, maybe I run a charity. You know, maybe I run a charity slot just to give back again. Yeah. You know, be able to conquer. You know, conquer two birds with one stone, or kill two birds with one stone with, you know, raise money for, you know, maybe the children with cancer fund, and also, you know, just see if I can do the distance again.
Yeah, yeah. And how are you feeling these days? How's the leg holding up? How are the injuries and stuff?
Pretty good. It's interesting that you asked that, because after three surgeries, what they have to do every time they would go in and do another surgery is they have to sand the bone down to make it bleed again so that the body knows it's got to heal. Because what happens is the bone caps itself off. You know, if you've ever seen an amputee, how it smooths over and it forms a callus on the end of the bone. So every time they had to redo the surgery, they had to sand that bone down to make it bleed again. Well, I did lose some fragments off of it as well, so the bone was shorter. I mean, in every subsequent surgery, the bone was shorter and shorter. So now I've ended up with almost 3/4 inch leg length discrepancy now. And so initially, I was having quite a bit of pain just from, you know, the weight bearing, the pounding, the muscles atrophying, because what was funny is I had this little one twig of a leg and the other one was pretty muscular. So to build that back up, you know, took its toll. But the pain now is, now that the bone's healed, I've got actually almost like a bulb of bone around the fracture area. So it's nice and solid, and it was psychologically beneficial for me to see the bone growth there, because, you know, yeah, in your mind, you're sitting there going, is it going to break again? I don't know if I can trust it. So now that it's healed back, the only problem is now I've got a 3/4 inch leg length discrepancy. So I'm having more trouble with my back now than I am my leg, because, you know, the leg is solid, but, you know, that leg length discrepancy is going to play with your hips and your spinal curvature. And so I'm dealing with that. I did try orthotics, but it jacked my back up so badly.
Yeah, worse.
I couldn't deal with it. So I'm just contending with it and doing, you know, as much massage therapy, stretching, foam rolling, you know, everything I can to ease that off. My coaches tell me sometimes, it's like, I don't want you working out until you're pain-free. And I'm like, I just turned 58 yesterday. And I'm like,
oh, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
And you look amazing.
Oh,
I have
thank
to say
you.
Again.
I just turned 58 yesterday, and I'm not sure I'll ever be pain-free again, because, you know, just getting out of the bed in the morning, you got the, you know, aches and pains of an almost 60-year-old person. But you know, management-wise, you know, you got to do those extras with, you know, I tell my chiropractor all the time, she puts me back together on a weekly basis. So chiropractic, physical therapy, massage therapy, foam rolling on your own, stretching. You know, I did discover CBD oil. So that is, I found that to be a really good, you know, alternative to any kind of pharmaceuticals, you know, if you will.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of CBD oil.
That's awesome. Yeah, and it's, I love that you're so solution based. You know, it's like, let's figure it out. Let's see what we can do. And that's something I see now too. Is I'm doing like a lot of the mobility stuff that I saw some of my older friends doing 10 years ago. And I'm like, oh wait, yeah, I need to do that. But it's doing it. You know, figuring out how we can do and be the best we can be.
Well, it's funny, when you're in your 20s and 30s, you know, you go out and you beat yourself up and you don't think about things like stretching and all these extras that you need to do. And you continue to, you know, just do your runs, you know, do your workouts, whatever, and just deal with the pain and go about your business. But once you cross, I would say, the 40, 45, 50-year-olds, you can't do that anymore. You have to do the extras. You have to spend time doing it, whether you got the time or not. You got to make the time to do it.
Yeah, and that's it. Maintenance, you know, maintenance on the body. And I love to see you finding solutions and moving forward. Is there anything else you'd like to touch on, or could you give us the name of your coach again and the people that you run with?
Yeah, so I run with Without Limits. My coach, who's a big mentor of mine, even though he could be my son, his name is Tom Clifford, and he's published a lot in the local magazines and newspaper and things like that. He's a phenomenal elite athlete in his own right, you know, both running and triathlon, just a phenomenal athlete and very inspiring. And, you know, sometimes he has to do that tough love thing, you know, where,
right,
you know,
that's a good coach.
Yeah. And even though you might not like what you hear at the time, you have to, you know, take his words and kind of digest that a little bit and put it in perspective. And most of the time he's right. I don't like to always admit it, but he's right, you know. And, you know, I think the good thing about a coach is, you know, spending time knowing their athletes, you know, whether they're, you know, regardless of their capabilities, their talent, you know, just knowing every athlete and knowing what's right for every athlete, I think is, you know, anybody seeking out a coach, you know, should look for those qualities, not just somebody that does a cookie cutter routine for every athlete. And I know I'm probably the biggest challenge because of the injuries and him having to be so careful and planning things out, but by the same token, caring. So that's always, you know, that's always nice to have, to find a coach like that. But, and I would just like to throw out there too, there's, you know, like I said, they got that walk to run program. And I think some people look at some of the level three athletes and even the ones that qualified for the Olympic trials, and sometimes people are intimidated, you know, it's like, I can't go out there, I can never measure up to those people. And it's not about comparing yourself to any other athlete. You know, do what you can do, you know, just get moving. And if you can do walk to run, I mean, there's no set, you know, expectation of what you should be able to do. Just get out there and try it. You might surprise yourself. For anybody, don't let an injury, don't let a mental attitude get in your way of things. If you're in pain, again, get moving. I mean, you might surprise yourself. Endorphins and, you know, adrenaline are the body's natural pain, you know, pain medicine. So, you know, people might surprise themselves if they just get moving. It may make a world of difference. And I've lived through some of the most excruciating pain that there is. And I would just say, if I can do it, I think anybody out there can do it.
You were talking about how you have like your miles, like you'll name your mile and you've run this mile for this person and that person and the significance of that. Were you able to use any of those type of, I don't want to call them tricks, but motivations or different techniques? Were you able to use any of that in your recovery?
I would say it's a little bit different. What was interesting for me is once I started rehab, I had to start looking at rehab as almost like a race. You know, it's like, okay, my challenge now, and I had to set small goals. You know, my challenge now is I've got to learn how to walk again, you know, and I've got to muster up the courage, you know, to put one foot in front of the other and trust that I'm not going to fall. Nothing, you know, nothing's going to break again. But I had to look at my rehab almost like a race, you know, in that I've got to do this, you know, the date is this, and everything that I've got to do through this rehab is a means to an end, you know, so if I make any sense at all. But, you know, I had to look at it as my new challenge, my new race, if you will, because now I've got to conquer being able to walk again before I can run again. And then I've got to, even though I'm running and only running 12-minute miles, it's like, but a month ago, I couldn't even walk. So now it's like I've got to gut through doing, my coach would give me workouts, you know, like, you know, 8 by, you know, running 1 minute. And I'm like, the only way I get to being able to run 2 minutes is to run a minute at a time, you know. So I would have to break it into, all right, this is my next race. Yeah, I'd look at every workout as if it was my next race or the next challenge.
Oh, that's awesome. I can relate. In powerlifting, we train for like 10 or 12 weeks for a competition, and we do what's called a periodization program, where you start with a lighter weight for more repetitions, and over the weeks, you gradually increase the weight and decrease the repetitions. And I can relate to that kind of a cycle of meeting those short-term goals into intermediate goals to get to the long-term goals. Oh, that's awesome. When we're competing, and you and racing, me and powerlifting, we're pushing ourselves to the absolute limit. So in recovery and therapy, like I remember coming out of intensive care for 8 days and learning to walk again after that, and the amount of focus that it would take just to do the simplest basic things. And my instinct is to push. I wanted to jump out of that bed the first day I was in intensive care. I couldn't, but I wanted to, and run out of the room, you know. And then when I finally could, they had to take half a day just to sit me up. So how did you use that great skill to push yourself and drive during a marathon? How did you learn to apply that to your recovery, but not overdo it?
Yeah, great question, because by nature, I'm an overachiever.
Right.
And so, you know, the challenge is, well, I've got to run 12 by 1 minute. Why don't I run 12 by 2 minutes? Why don't I run 12 by 5 minutes? You know, but a lot of times pain
yes.
is your guide.
Pain,
you know,
is a great motivator.
Yeah, I mean, and physically couldn't do it, but also that whole that whole thing, you've got to take it a step at a time, because if you overdo it, you're going to take giant steps backwards and re-injure something that's going to prolong you getting back to doing what you love to do. So, you know, I had to have a lot of guidance from, you know, the physical therapist, from my coach, again, you know, and my husband's like, you are overdoing it. You need to get off that leg. You need to let it rest. I'm like, but
yeah,
I have to overachieve, you know. So it was a real struggle for me, because my nature is to overachieve. And, you know, sometimes less is more, as they say, and you've got to give your body a chance. You know, our body's build, as you know, as a bodybuilder, our bodies, you know, gain strength and muscle in recovery when you're resting, not so much just killing yourself every second of every day,
right? Yeah. No, it is. It's great that I feel like we've both been able to surround ourselves with good, supportive people and knowledgeable. I think that's a huge part of it. And then I know for me, just finally kind of learning to listen to my body. You know, if it's screaming at me, there's probably a pretty good reason, like, you know, good pain and bad pain, you know.
That's exactly right.
So in our episode with Rebel Hot Yoga, Kim had spinal fusion, and she had really had been into working out, and she loved working out, and she was just so devastated in the recovery from the spinal fusion, and she was at a really low point, and she kind of had this aha moment where she saw this person running outside, and she's like, I'm going to do that again. And it like flipped the switch for her to get her back on the track of being physical. And it's taken her to a whole new level. Did you have an aha moment like that? Or did you just kind of know that I'm going to get back?
I think because of what happened with me, and again, to Kim's point, you play, I mean, it's psychological warfare. I mean, it is a mental devastating thing that happens to you, and there's the doubt in your mind if you can ever get back. But for me, because of the local group here, and because so many of them were personal friends, I almost felt like I had to get back to prove, you know, to myself, you know, there's that challenge of, or that mental debate that you go through of, I'm scared to death to do this again because of what will happen. What if I break the other leg? You know, I mean, things like that that go through your mind. But then there's the, but I can't let this beat me. You know, this cannot define who I am, and I'm going to beat this. Because, again, I'm competitive by nature, and I'm like, I cannot let this win. And I am, I would profess over myself, and I'm a spiritual person as well, and it's like, you know, I am trusting God that this is going to heal itself, and I am going to run again. I am going to do triathlons again. And so, you know, there was that whole thing is like, I never thought I'm never going to do this again. It was like, I'm going to do this again. I will not let this beat me.
And you have. I love that too, the community and the support that you have. There's an old bodybuilding saying, work out with the kind of people you want to look like. And it sounds to me like you've run with the kind of people that you want to be like.
Well, and I always joke, I have a saying that's like, either be a good example or a horrible warning.
That's a really good one.
I did not want to be a horrible warning.
Right, it's right. Well, you're definitely a great example. Alicia, thank you so much for your energy, your motivation, your message. And thank you for being on the Bolt for Life podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
We appreciate you listening to Bolt for Life. Our goal is to help you or anyone that you might know to live and thrive with chronic pain. And you can help us out by subscribing or giving us a review on iTunes or anywhere else that you hear Bolt for Life. Oh, it was so great having Alicia on the podcast today. Her message is amazing, and I hope you guys were able to get some information and inspiration from Alicia. She is so passionate and driven. She really embraces life, and she accomplishes her goals, and she keeps moving forward. To steal her quote that she stole from her friend, that we are rarely impressed with what people accomplish, but we're impressed with what they overcome. We are really impressed with Alicia. She's so competitive. She's so driven. You can see the drive. You can see the passion in her eyes. And for that, Alicia Williams, you are Bolt for Life. In future episodes, we'll be talking to chronic pain professionals and plenty of other inspiring guests to help you on your journey in chronic pain. If you guys have any ideas, you know, this isn't just about me, this is about all of us. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, Bolt for Life. Thanks again. This is Garrett Bolt for Bolt for Life.